What if every day you had the chance to experience more love and intimacy in your life? We're going to be sharing stories of struggles and triumphs in love, sex, and relationships, along with expert advice to create more conscious connections. Enjoy this podcast with Dawn Richard. Wake up to real love.
Hi, everyone. This is Dawn Richard, also known as The Awakening with Dawn, and this is the Wake Up to Real Love show, podcast show, where we share stories of struggles and triumphs in love, sex, and relationships, along with expert advice to create more conscious connections. I am super honored today to invite my friend and colleague, Lee Height. Hi, Lee.
Hi, Dawn. So good to be here with you today. I'm very excited about this.
Me too. Lee and I have known each other through Clubhouse for a couple years now, and we resonate so deeply. I mean, every room that I'm in with him, I just feel my heart just, you know, bursting out of my chest because, yeah.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah. So, yeah. You know, so I wanted to have Lee on. I'll tell you a little bit about Lee before we dive in, but Reverend Lee has been a minister of Centers for Spiritual Living since graduating from the Ernest Holmes College School of Ministry in Seattle, Washington in 1989. He was ordained in 1993 and served as senior minister for three churches and assisted in two others. In the larger movement, he served as a local, regional, and national youth leader, including 2 years as chairman of International Youth and Family Ministries. He also served on the International Board of Trustees for 3 years and taught in the School of Ministry. He is a life coach, a mentor. He's working on a book of inspirational essays, daily readings, and journal guides scheduled for completion in 2023. This man has a huge heart. Welcome, Lee Height.
Thank you, Dawn. So good to be here. I'm really looking forward to the conversation and seeing what kind of good we can do today.
So, yeah. Okay. So when you were a kid, did you say, I want to grow up and be a minister?
No. No.
What did you want to be when you grew up?
I was a very, very shy, super shy kid.
That doesn't surprise me, by the way, because you still have those moments of.
Yes, I do. I do. Yeah. I'm what's commonly known as an introverted extrovert.
Yeah.
So I recharge in isolation, but I also am not shy to speak my mind when I think it's appropriate. Mm-hmm. My dad made me take public speaking my freshman year in high school.
Really?
It was the one thing he said, you will do this. And there was like, when he said, you will do this, there was no.
No arguing. Yeah. Did you ask him why?
Because I didn't have to, because it was like, he says, you need to learn, you have to learn to speak up.
Oh, interesting. And, do you have siblings, Lee?
I have one younger brother who is very outgoing. I mean, he's the social creature, of the two of us.
How interesting for your dad. I mean, that your dad would tell you that. So what was that experience like for you?
It was actually great. Once I got past it, once I got kind of past the initial angst and fear, I really got into it. I mean, the big thing I did that was part of that was I was on the debate team in high school for 2 years.
Really? After you did that?
Yes. That was part of it. So
good for you.
Yeah. So I was on the debate team and, you know, kind of moved up the ranks of that. And that was a blast. But gave that up after my sophomore year, walked away from that.
So how did that change your ability to speak up?
It was amazing. I mean, I was still pretty shy. But when it came time for me to speak up, I had no problem doing that. Mm-hmm. It was very much, it was at that point in my life, I had really two worlds. There was my high school life. And about that same time is when I started my own spiritual journey and got involved with the Centers for Spiritual Living, which at that time was known as the Church of Religious Science. Mm-hmm. And so I started that study and got involved in the youth group at the church and kind of found my tribe and was at the youth group. And it's like, I was the only one from my high school that went there.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like all these kids from all over Southern California, or the Southern California area that I lived in. And it was great. It was a blast. And so that was really where my social life was. My high school friends, that was like high school, but you know, most of the kids that I grew up with from third grade on. But the church people, that was really where my heart was.
And, did your parents accompany you? I mean, what was your religious upbringing?
My parents were born and were raised Methodist, and they actually met in a Methodist youth group at the college they went to, which is where, mm-hmm. where they met. I'm not sure why. I really have never really understood. I've never asked, and really never even bothered to ask why we really didn't go to church when I was a kid. Not sure what that was. I knew we were always busy on weekends. Like once I turned 8, and I started playing baseball. I mean, weekends were baseball mm-hmm. or whatever sports season happened to be going on.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, that kind of chewed up weekends, even though, you know, it was still back in the day when like most stores were closed on Sunday and, you know, things like that were still going on.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I never really asked. I mean, it was like one of those things. It was something I picked up on my own.
Mm-hmm.
So
where, how did you evolve from that and to become deciding to become a reverend?
I was at a retreat. I mean, I found my way into leadership in the youth group, number one, when I was part of it. And then we were at a summer retreat, kind of, you know, we had like, you know, 200-300 teenagers plus adults gathering for a week in the Redwoods in Northern California.
Nice.
Yeah, it was great. And a minister was kind of helping lead my small group or one of the small group I was in. And towards the end of the week, you know, you kind of have this little activity where you kind of go around and you sit and share with each individual, you know, your impressions, your thoughts, your feelings about that person for the week. And he looked at me and he says, you're just the kind of person we need to in ministry. Mm-hmm. And it just hit me. And so that was the start of it. But thinking about it, and it stuck with me. I mean, after I got into leadership and, you know, kept taking classes and so on. But after I graduated high school, I spent about 4 or 5 years really kind of tearing up the world and getting out there and doing the, you know, rebellious teenager, early 20s thing. Mm. And, eventually found my way. I ended up at the age of 22 going on 23, lifeguarding in Marina Del Rey, and basically living out of my car in the parking lot of the
really
oh yeah at the parking lot of the of the super exclusive private club I was lifeguarding at. And you know, and just didn't, you know, wasn't bothering me. It got a little tiresome, but you know, about that time, my parents had moved to Seattle a few years before that, and my dad, I don't know how he tracked me down, but he did. He came down and found me and said, "Hey, whatever happened to becoming a minister?" And he had the course catalog for the school in Seattle with him.
Interesting.
And he said, "You want to move up? You want to go to school? We'll cover it for you. We'll pay your tuition. You take care of your books." He says, "However, you make this commitment. You will finish what you start." Mm. And I said, "Okay." And that was the deal. So I finished out the summer. I had like, I don't know, 6 weeks to go. And interestingly enough, security, I guess, had finally had enough of me living in the parking lot. And they spoke to the club president. And he came and found me, and I told him what was going on. And he's, and his daughter worked at the summer camp in the club. Mm-hmm. And we had become friends because I was the lifeguard for the summer camp as part of what I did. And so I ended up spending the last several weeks living in the president's apartment.
Wow. That was nice.
Free of charge.
That was very generous.
It was very generous. He was very kind, very nice man. And so, yeah, I mean, life, you know, when one is committed, the universe conspires on our behalf.
So, why do you think you went through that rebellious stage? Were you running towards something or running away from something?
I was running away from a lot of pain. Hmm. I was running away from a lot of old patterns that had developed starting when I was very young. Both of my parents have addictions of their own. And I'm not going to dive too deeply into that. That's a story for them to tell. And I inherited a lot of that. I mean, at a very young age, I picked up addictions, an addiction to pornography, addiction to that kind of activity. I started in late, I guess, junior high, high school with various drugs. Mm-hmm. Alcohol was never a thing for me, but the drugs, sex and love addiction, all that had been part of my history. And I got out of high school, and all of a sudden I just started pushing back against my parents. I turned 18 and moved out.
Oh, wow.
No question. I mean, of my own accord.
Wow.
I was just done. Mm-hmm. I was done with that whole thing. On the outside, from the outside looking in, our family looked great. On the inside, not so much. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of issues. And even today, I mean, if people would look back at it, I mean, it would look fine. But there's a lot going on, and
there's always stuff going on.
There's always
doors that nobody knows about.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I was running away from that and not doing a very good job because I carried it with me. It was in a backpack on my back. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like any of us who have had experience with addiction or know people close in our lives with addiction, know that's baggage that takes a while to unpack.
Yeah.
You need to look at it and really do the work with getting through the shame, getting through the pain, getting through all the angst, not necessarily from looking at what we may look at the exterior causes, but looking at the interior causes.
Right.
Let's say, hey, you know what? I'm okay. I'm worthwhile. I am worthy of being here, and it's okay. I can do the work. I am not that person anymore because I've learned and I've changed and learned and grown as part of the process. I also know that, you know, without the spiritual grounding and the foundation that I had, that I had developed over time, you know, starting in junior high, going into high school and beyond, I shudder to think of what the outcomes might have been without that. And without the person-to-person connections that I had as part of that as well, you know, the people that cared about me and still care about me to this day. So,
do you think that a lot of people who struggle with addictions self-isolate? Like it's almost like this: which came first, the isolation and the feelings of unworthiness or questioning? You know, what's my purpose, or am I good enough, or why are these bad things happening to me? I mean, it's very multi-complexly. Can you talk about that?
It's very complex. In a lot of ways, it's very complex, and also it can be very, from a certain point of view, very simple. And maybe we're actually talking about this in a clubhouse room this morning.
Oh, really?
absolutely. Yes. Yeah. There is one room I've been participating in on Saturday mornings that is just a powerful room on recovery. And we were talking, this is just the topic we were talking about, of how we talk about it all the time in recovery. It's like addiction thrives in isolation.
Yes.
And frequently addiction is born in isolation. Mm-hmm. It not only thrives there, it's born there.
Right.
And for me, that was absolutely the case. It was very much about feeling alone, feeling abandoned, and wanting to reconnect with my dad and trying to do that, through his own addiction, mm-hmm. through adopting his own addiction, and then further isolating myself because of the shame attached to it. So it could even compound
it. It's like a spiral.
It's absolutely a spiral. And it spiraled down and down and down and down and down and down and started at an early age. So you can, it started at age 6.
Wow.
So we can imagine what that looked like at age 18, 19, 20, 25, until I got a handle on it. Mm-hmm. And it was so powerful and so deeply ingrained. And I really had never, I didn't really identify the genesis point until about 18 months ago.
Really?
Yeah.
So talk about that. Because how old are you? you're talking from age 6 over decades. Right?
Over decades. Yeah. It took me to identify the genesis point. Yeah, absolutely. And that's where a lot of deep work, a lot of journaling, meditation, prayer, and on and on, all the stuff, and talking with people in recovery. And, it was, I kind of looked at it before, but I was in a short-lived relationship, with a woman up until it was about a little coming up on 2 years ago. We started talking and finally got the opportunity to go, because she lives in another state, got the opportunity to go meet her and spend some time. And it just didn't go well. And we both had our own issues and so on. We're still friends today, but it's like anything beyond friends is just not.
Right. That's okay.
But and that's great. It's fine. And we're both, good friends, and we talk about that stuff all the time. But what it caused me to do was to really stop and reevaluate, because I got in and I got so attached. Mm-hmm. It's like my unhealthy attachment style is very, anxious.
Anxious.
Yes. Yeah. I have a very, very anxious, I have up until now had a very anxious attachment style. And so that just led me into this whole different level of self-discovery. And I dove into a lot of recovery spaces on Clubhouse. There's a huge recovery community on Clubhouse. Mm-hmm. And because it was something I could do while I work.
Right.
I could sit in meetings almost virtually all day long.
Right.
Because of what I do during the day, I'm by myself a lot, or I can just have my earphones in or whatever. So listening and talking and doing my own processing, finally, all of a sudden, one evening, I was sitting doing some writing, doing some meditating, and I finally got it. I could see that 6-year-old version of me and went, wow. It was just a whole revelation point. Yeah. It was just this huge aha moment. And so I spend time with him. I carry him with me. And talk to him.
What do you tell him?
Do all the stuff.
What do you tell him?
I tell him that it's okay. That he's worthwhile. And that he gets to be here too.
You didn't get that message from your parents.
No. No, they did what they could.
Of course.
And they had their own things they were trying to handle. And So I get to carry him with me. He rides in the car with me, you know, when I'm by myself. Mm-hmm. We talk and he gets to have fun too, because he didn't get to.
He didn't get to have fun. No. Because he was put in situations where he had to be a grown-up, or he was just exposed to grown-up things that he wasn't ready for.
He was exposed to grown-up things that he wasn't ready for. He didn't know that he was okay. Because dad and mom got divorced when he was 5.
Uh-huh.
And then they got remarried when he was 8.
Oh, interesting.
And so he got told that he wasn't okay because dad left. And then he got told again that he wasn't okay because he wasn't doing a very good job with mom. So dad had to come back.
Oh, wow. So you were blamed for their relationship issues.
Yep.
That's a big burden for a 6-year-old, 7-year-old, 8-year-old.
Yeah, but that was the message. And I never really got it.
Uh-huh.
I kind of looked at it before and said, not again. But it's like this time looking at it, I was like, yeah, that's it.
Wow.
And all the energy and all the emotion and all the stuff came up with it. Yeah.
And so that was fallen on a child's shoulders, which they should never be responsible for.
Right.
And of course, I mean, now you recognize that, thank goodness.
Now I recognize it. And because I've recognized it, it's like, I mean, over the years, I've gotten better at relationships, but now I'm even, you know, it has freed me up because I don't carry the shame and the guilt anymore for all the stuff. You know, it's like all the addiction stuff, all that activity, all the isolation, all the feeling, you know, all the self-imposed shame and abuse that I put upon myself.
Judgment.
All the judgment. Yeah. It's like, you know what? That's that part of me that's just been waiting to get healed.
Yeah.
And screaming for attention. And unfortunately, all that screaming for attention didn't come in a healthy way, but now I get to look at it and say, you know what? We're going to be okay. It's like, you know, we say in recovery, abstinence is not recovery.
Right.
We can abstain from stuff all day long and white knuckle our way through it.
Right.
But that's not healing. That's not healing. And so I had found a measure of healing in all of that. However, now, you know, the work that I've been doing over the last 8 months has taken it to a whole new level. And a lot of it is just, you know, a lot of the screaming, you know, the internal screaming and angst and, you know, I want attention and all that stuff, you know, filling, you know, trying to fill the empty.
Right. Which don't you think that's at the core?
That is absolutely the core. Absolutely. It's like we're trying to, there are two ways of looking at it that I've come up with. You know, one is like, you know, what is the empty I'm trying to fill?
Mm-hmm.
And the other side of it is, what is the life? What is the degree of livingness that I'm trying, that is wanting to be truly expressed?
Mm-hmm.
What's being held back?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, the old school metaphysicians will tell you that addiction is what they will say, and what I've read time and time again from multiple sources, is essentially that addiction is an inversion of life seeking expression, right? It's an unhealthy way of giving expression to life, because it has to be.
You can speak to this, because right. I often think that it's your creativity and your emotions just being completely squashed.
Right. Until they just have to come out. And when they have to come out, then they find that crack, it comes out in whatever way is convenient.
Uh-huh.
And so if I have those unhealthy patterns, it's going to find those patterns, uh-huh, because they're convenient. They're already there.
Uh-huh.
So until I...
You don't have to look very far for them.
No. And so until I create new, healthier patterns, new, healthier ways for life to express, and let those be the dominant patterns, you know, then it's like, oh, okay, I can do this. Because I've cleared away what no longer serves me.
Okay.
Because I'm convinced that for me to live a happier, healthier life, what I'm doing is clearing away misconception or limiting ideas.
Misconception of what?
Of who and what I am. So misconception. So I got that message early on that said, I am not good enough. I'm not deserving. I'm not okay. When the truth of me is that, you know, I am okay just by virtue of being born into this world. I am okay. I am fundamentally a loving, joyful, enthusiastic, happy, healthy individual. I'm whole, complete, and perfect as an expression of life. That is at the core of my being.
Right.
And so over time, I took on other messages from the adults in the room that said I wasn't.
That said, no, you're not.
Right. No, you're not. So
no, you're not.
You know, children are to be seen and not heard, and, you know, don't do this and don't do that. But, you know, all the don'ts crowded in and said, okay, that I'm just not okay, so I can't do this. So the process then becomes one of clearing away the ideas of I'm not good enough, the ideas that I'm not deserving of love, and saying, you know what, I deserve love. I deserve to be happy. I'm worthy of prosperity. I'm worthy of health. I'm worthy of wholeness. I'm worthy of healthy relationship. I'm worthy of connection. I love people. People love me. All this stuff. So that's at my core. So I'm stripping away what doesn't work so that I can reveal what does work.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about revealing my true nature rather than the lies I've been telling myself.
Mm-hmm. So how did those lies that you were telling yourself interfere in your previous marriages, because you were married twice before, right?
Been married twice, and God bless them both. We are friends. You know, we are good friends.
That's today. Great. That's amazing.
Because we've taken the time to do the work and to talk and to keep talking. Wasn't easy, but it's there now. It took the time. The challenges I had in relationship, you know, were fundamentally, you know, that I had not at that time really done the deep work. I had done the surface work. I'd been abstinent to a degree. With my first wife, I was horrible. I was still new in ministry, and some things, and I'd been pretty abstinent. And I knew it was a challenge. I knew it was something that was a problem. I was young. I was a rising star. I was, you know, and I was successful. And I kept getting handed opportunity after opportunity after opportunity to take on more and more and more.
Mm-hmm.
And I crashed. I was horrible at self-care. I was horrible at boundaries, and fell into addictive activities. That finally, I had to resign. I had to step down.
And I was just going to say, how did you manage this like double life?
Yeah, it was horrible. It was all secrets and darkness and isolation. Uh-huh. I was isolated. There's a title of one book that about around sex and love addiction that is called Lonely All the Time.
Oh, wow.
And you're very much lonely. I was very much lonely. I'd be in a room full of people and be lonely.
Mm.
And
you felt that way in your marriage as well, lonely in your marriage.
Felt that way in the marriage as well. Didn't know how to ask for help. Didn't know how to ask for what I wanted. Didn't know how to ask for support because I was the minister. I was the guy who had to fix everybody.
Uh-huh.
I had to help everybody. So that led to my first real entry into recovery, was in what that had to be 98.
Mm-hmm.
And stepped down from the ministry, went into other, I went back into trade, you know, work in the trades because I had worked in the trades, went to work as a chimney sweep, which is a whole other, I mean, there's a whole big metaphor going on there with clean, you know, cleaning out all the darkness.
Mm.
Kind of fits. Wrote a great essay about that at one point. So I spent years doing that, and, you know, and kind of let, you know, found my way into other things and ended up in another relationship with my second wife. And that one went better. Relationship lasted a good deal longer, but eventually, you know, because I hadn't done the deep work, fell back into addiction. And it was more, that one was more, there were other issues going on there too. Not just me. It takes two.
Right.
The good news is that one in the aftermath, we were both much healthier. And you know, making the transition from being a couple to co-parenting was a whole lot smoother.
Mm-hmm.
And still is today. But again, it was the nature of isolating under pressure. And we both have that pattern. So yeah, there was all that.
Does the isolation, serve as a way to just say, I can figure it out? Or is it more like, I'm just going to hide from the outside world because I can't deal with whatever is going on inside of me?
I think there's there's both.
Uh-huh.
I mean, there's the part of me, there's part of me that says, yeah, you know, I'm really smart and I can figure this out.
Is that the ego? Yeah.
There's very much, that's egocentrism, you know, mm-hmm. run rampant. And the smarter part of me knows that if I get with somebody like you or others, you know, in our crowd, I know I can pick up the phone. I say, I just need you to listen to me while I'm talking.
Yeah.
Because I can talk. I know that once I start talking, I will find the answer, but it takes for me, because of the way I'm wired, and this is a new understanding I've come to in the last couple of years. Because of the way I'm wired, sometimes it just takes somebody either just listening or being willing to listen or asking that one question that I'm missing.
Right. It's just some other perspective.
Right. Some other slightly different perspective to kind of unlock the door so that I can get the answer. We all know our own answers. And
we do. Sometimes we have to ask a lot of questions, though.
Sometimes we do.
For years, Lee.
I know, for years. I know. Yes. Guilty. Absolutely.
Me too.
Absolutely. Yeah. So listening to myself is can be hard sometimes. Yeah. Because there's that old part of me that really doesn't want to ask for help. And there's the newer, healthier, happier part of me that's like, dude, pick up the phone. You know,
why do you think so many people are afraid to pick up the phone? It's like we are programmed not to ask for help.
It is interesting. And I really don't know the answer to that question.
I mean, when you're a kid and learning how to walk,
right,
we offer a hand down to help pick them up again so they can get back up and try again.
Yeah. Right. And I think it's gotten worse. I know it's gotten worse with the advent of social media. We get this very skewed view of how other people live.
Well, yeah, that's because it's just the shiny stuff that people show.
Right. Right. We get the shiny sparkly side. Right. That's why I'm committed.
Nobody wants to video me, you know, when I'm crying on the floor for 3 hours.
Right? That's why it's like something. It's like people, like some of the posts that I do on some of my stuff are very get very raw,
yeah,
and a little bit dark sometimes. And you know, they kind of find their way back, but it's like, interestingly enough, the darker, deeper stuff frequently gets more response from people.
Of course,
because it's real.
Because it's real.
People want real, and. I forget that sometimes. Quiet. yeah, I forget that because it's easy. Because I want to be, you know, there's still that part of me that wants everything to be okay all the time.
Well, and life isn't like that. I mean, no. I feel like life is okay most of the time, but we have challenges and struggles because that's part of being human, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So why do we pretend that it's not okay to have those struggles?
We pretend because we don't want to be vulnerable. I pretend because I don't want to be vulnerable sometimes. I pretend because I get tired. There's part of me that absolutely gets tired of digging. Mm-hmm. Tired, you know, it's like sometimes a friend, one of my mentors actually posted something. and it said, sometimes you need to rest and integrate. Sometimes you need to put the books down.
Yeah.
You need to stop going to the workshops, stop listening to the podcast.
Go for a walk. Play some music.
Right.
Dance.
Take a couple of days off and have fun and live life. It doesn't all have to be heavy, deep, and real all the time. Because especially for somebody like me, or maybe even like you, we get so committed to our growth. We get so committed to the path and learning and growing and healing and all this stuff that we forget the reason we're doing it. And the reason I'm doing it is so I can be happier, and so I can live a better life,
and so I can live
and have fun, right? So I get those, like, dude, take a couple of days off, go have some fun, and then come back to it. Like right now, I'm reading three different books.
Really? What are they? Yeah. Tell me.
I am reading Practicing the Presence by Joel Goldsmith. Hmm. Eckhart Tolle's A New Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And what's the other one? Oh, this is the one I'm getting ready to pick up, is The Third Jesus by Deepak Chopra.
Oh, I haven't read that.
Oh, and I just finished a fun book called Skid Game by Jim Butcher. It's part of the Dresden Files.
I don't know what that is. What is that?
Oh, Dresden Files is like, imagine if you blended Merlin and your favorite present day detective.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
So it's about a wizard who's also a private detective. So
that's kind of cool. Yeah.
It's a very cool, it's a great series. There's like 16 or 17 books in the series. And it's just well written. That's my fun reading. Yes. Right now. So
we need some fun. I think we forget. Right. It's like when we're kids, we play. And as adults, we forget to play.
We do.
Makes us very dull and boring.
Frequently forget to play. Yes. In fact, I took a Saturday off last week and just ran up to Sedona for the day with a friend and had a great time.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah.
So is that also part of the isolation and self? It's almost like self punishment.
Mm-hmm. It can be, yeah.
Like I'm not worthy of even playing or having fun or having joy, experiencing joy in my life.
Right, I've got to do all the work. Yes, uh-huh. And frequently I think that's the case. I think we get lost, and it's like I got to heal. I got to get this done so I can be okay. Truth is, I'm a lot better now than I was yesterday or the day before that or the day before that. Every day I make a little progress in terms of my learning and growing and being a little bit better. So today I can be happy. Yeah, I can be happy today. I deserve to be happy, and it's okay.
And how about I'm okay?
Yeah.
I'm okay while I'm continuing to explore and continuing to excavate and continuing to, you know, shed, learn about, well, let me ask you this, like, what have you learned about these dark parts of yourself? Because we all have them.
Right.
The social media, you know, facade is that we don't have them.
Right. And we do. I mean, and for me, it's like the shadow is part of me as well.
Of course.
And so the shadow's got to be okay. The shadow is part of what helps me heal. Yeah. It's like we try to tell ourselves that the dark places are, there is programming out there, right? That says the dark places are bad. Dark places aren't bad.
Avoid the dark places.
Right, the dark places aren't bad. And see, the dark place is like we stop and think about it just in terms of nature, right?
Night.
We got nighttime, right? But the other part of it is when we plant seeds, where do they go? Seeds go into the dark.
Correct.
Right? Seeds go into the dark. So when I'm feeling dark, I remind myself that that's an opportunity to plant seeds.
That's beautiful.
So when I go into the dark, when I go into the dark places, that's time to reflect. That's time to be still. That's time to remember that there is a spark of light that's always inside of me, number one. And number two, I can plant seeds in the dark. That's my opportunity to plant seeds of new growth, seeds of new ideas, to plant seeds that remind me that I am loved and I am loving, to plant seeds that remind me that peace is at my core, to plant seeds that remind me that I am a divine child of God, plant seeds that divine intelligence, to remind me of all the goodness that is in me, so that as they grow, I get reminded on a regular basis of all that goodness, because those are seeds that are going to sprout and grow. And I will get reminders as I move through life, because they will inevitably grow and pop up. And so I get to see them all around me. I get to see little reminders in the world that I'm okay, that I'm worthwhile. So I get to plant those seeds, because ultimately those seeds are inside of me. And so the light is inside of me, and the light's going to feed those seeds all in time.
And yeah, so, guess what else makes them grow, Lee?
What else makes them grow?
Fertilizer.
Yeah, all the crap. Yep, all the crap. See, that's it. So here's the next part of the equation, right? So there's all the crap, which is all the stuff that I've let go of, right? All those limiting ideas that said I wasn't enough.
Right.
Blah, 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 blah.
The isolation, the shame, all the
judgment, all the nonsense, right? So I get to, that's like dumping all that stuff is like pulling the weeds.
Pulling the weeds, right.
Pulling the weeds. You don't necessarily throw the weeds away. The weeds become compost that inevitably feeds the soil. Because energy never gets lost. Energy is never destroyed. It just gets recycled. Mm-hmm. Just gets recycled and reused as something more constructive, more life-giving.
So how has your healing process impacted your life? Can you just talk about the things that you actually did, like the steps that you took or the tools that you've used to help in your healing journey?
Yeah, for me, my process, the way I work and the way I've discovered that I function, a couple things. For me, one is I keep talking, because I figure out a lot of stuff by talking. People ask me questions, you know, spending time on Clubhouse, spending more time working with the church now, and that's becoming more of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
I just started talking more. That's a big part of it.
Not isolating.
Not isolating, yeah. And it's like taking a lot of my process more public. I started doing more live stuff on social media. Not every day, but close to every day. doing more writing. Writing is a big part of my process. Journaling, working on my book, and just generally staying connected in the world, and taking time for myself, but not in an unhealthy isolationist way. Mm-hmm. And learning to differentiate inside myself of when that's healthy alone time and when it's not healthy alone time. Learning the difference.
All right. Talk about the difference.
I was just getting ready to do that. The difference being if I start hearing dialogue, an internal dialogue that is self-defeating, or dragging me back into places I know are, you know what, you've tried all this stuff, this is not working, da 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 da, you know, it's like all that kind of chitter chatter. If I start hearing that, the self-defeat stuff, it's like, you know what? No, you need to get up and move. Mm-hmm. You need to get up, go for a walk. You need to go to the gym. You need to go reach out, connect with somebody, you know, pick up the phone, do something, right? But conversely, you know, the healthy isolation is, hey, I need to sit and meditate, read a book, you know, just do, you know, go take a bath, you know, that kind of stuff. Healthy self-care stuff by myself, uh-huh. That's a different story. Sitting down, binge watching a TV show for half a day, every now and then, fine. Every day, two or three episodes, not a good thing. So learning to distinguish between the behaviors that are healthy, self-supporting, self-feeding, and the self-defeating ones has been a huge key and a huge shift that has really empowered me over the last couple of years.
Well, if you're watching a couple episodes, maybe it's comedic break, you know, I need some laughs I'm giving myself a break from doing the work, you know, it's that.
Right. Yeah, no, exactly.
I've been hanging out with my kids, you know, watching mindless whatever. It's just, you know, family time, right? Or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's been great. It's like over the Christmas break, I actually had my oldest and my two little ones here.
Aww.
Together for the first time in like 5 years.
Wow.
And so that was great. My oldest is 32. And the youngest is like 11 and 8.
Uh-huh.
That was the first time they'd been together in like forever.
Wow.
And because the oldest is kind of like a rock star for them because he's got a pretty significant, social media following because he's done cosplay and he's real popular on TikTok and some other things. So he's like a rock star in their eyes. So it was cool to have him here and them together. It was a blast. We sat around, played video games, watched stupid TV, and
just had some fun. Yeah.
Yeah. Just had some fun. It was great. Yeah. Yep. 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 And so, it was great. So how do you
integrate all of these things now into your normal day and your normal, connecting with people and your normal, like even just creating a sense of your own hopes and goals and dreams for what you want to do in your life or who you want to become?
It's like one of the things that we had to do in ministerial school was kind of develop a personal credo, a personal vision, like a short little vision statement for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I periodically go back and revisit it. And the one I came up with was so simple and so straightforward that I was like, really?
Is that it?
and it came to me in meditation, and it's like we closed eyes and we did this long meditation and come up with it. And I got mine in like the first 30 seconds, and I'm waiting for the next 5 minutes for everybody else to finish.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, really? Okay. And I go back and I revisit it every now and then. I go, is that really? Is that? And it's like, yeah, that's it, man. Stay with it. It's working. And it's simply to be a beneficial presence.
Oh, wow. That's beautiful. That's big. That's not, I mean, that's, you can say that's simple, but it's huge. That's a tall order.
So I stick with it. And however that shows up, whether I'm, you know, because I do facilities maintenance for a large veterinary chain, the nationwide chain. I handle everything here in Arizona, plus New Mexico and a little piece of Texas. And I remind myself of it because I can show up as a beneficial presence doing whatever I'm doing.
Exactly.
And it's not just what I physically do, but it's how I carry myself. It's how I'm feeling about me and the vibe I walk in with. And so I do what I can to stay conscious about my presence when I show up. Am I 100% vibrant and alive and enthusiastic every day? No.
Of course. Nobody is. Just kidding.
No, nobody is. So can I do my best? Yeah, I do my best.
Yeah.
And it shows. I know when I'm off, the energy in the room is off.
Right.
And that's true for any, and I think that's something we, as individuals, as people, we can be more mindful of. Yeah. Doesn't mean we don't show up. It just means we show up authentically. Because when we hide, even when we're trying to hide it, people know.
Right.
People know. And it's okay. It's okay to be vulnerable. It's okay to show up as not 100%. And it's okay when we notice others and we're, you know, and I'm in a good place and I notice somebody a little off to say, hey, I noticed that, you know, maybe you're a little off today. How can I help? Mm-hmm. Or maybe I can't help. Maybe it's just listening. Maybe it's just listening. Maybe not doing anything, but maybe just being present with somebody is enough. And quite honestly, most of the time, just being present with somebody is enough.
And how does compassion fit in?
Compassion is just sitting and listening and not having to fix. I don't have to fix. It's not my job. My job is just be present. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, that's kind of the thing I find is most of the time, if I can simply stay present, open, and with a sense of compassion in my heart, even if somebody's not saying anything, that's okay. And if they start talking, my job is to just simply listen. Because most of the time I have found people will frequently talk long enough to find their own answer.
Right.
And I'm committed as part of my training, part of the way I was taught and trained was to help people. The most effective way I can help people is to help them find their own answer.
Right.
If I hand somebody an answer, that's like handing them a fish. Right. If I help somebody find their own answer, that's teaching them to fish.
Right.
So.
And I feel like we all have our answers and we all can use other people's objective perspectives, you know, that help us shift maybe something so slightly that it's like, oh, I didn't really think about that. Or I never, you know, looked at it that way. So that you have, which is why we need each other. Which is why we need each other.
Right. Right. And that's the thing. I believe that's the thing we forget more often than anything else is that we are here together for a reason and a purpose. We are here collectively for a reason and a purpose. So we feed off each other. We reflect each other. Mm-hmm. You know, we hear our own answers coming out of somebody else's mouth. How often does that happen? or all of a sudden I'm handing somebody or I'm sharing an answer with somebody and I'm like, oh, yeah, I needed that.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Right.
We speak what we most need to hear.
Right. It happens to be all, I mean, like when I'm speaking on Sundays and stuff, like all of a sudden I'll get in a flow and something will come flying out of my mouth and I'll look in the room. I'll say, Somebody please write that down for me, because that was great. I had never thought of it quite that way before. You know, uh-huh. I never put it together, put those words together in quite that way before.
Yeah.
It's like, I need somebody to capture that. Because that was good.
we inspire each other.
Yes, we do. We motivate each other, inspire each other, hold space for each other.
That,
you know, all of it.
That in spirit, you know, inspire in spirit, because right. We are all in spirit. And I mm-hmm. think that's the truth that you're talking about. You know, I'm seeking something. And many times I seek outside of myself and I turn to things healthy or not so healthy in order mm-hmm. to feel that sense of spirit and presence within. But I can only do it within, and yet other people reflect that to me. So that's like, we're all pieces of this holographic puzzle.
Right. Yeah. We're all looking for reminders about how we're connected.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. And you say, you know, in spiritos, or inspire to breathe in, right? It's mm-hmm. all about breath. Breath and the connection, and remembering that we're connected. And that was, like I said, that was the thing we were talking about this morning, kind of circling back around, is remembering how connected we are. Because it is so easy to forget, because we isolate, because we live in our own little spaces, we drive in our little cars.
Right.
I mean, what, 80-90% of the cars out on the road have one person in them?
Right.
Right. We're all out there together, but we're boxed in by our little car or our bicycle or whatever. You know, we forget. We get all these messages about how separate we are, when in truth, even though we don't see it, we're all connected, because then we can feel it when we allow ourselves to.
Yeah.
And the trick is in feeling good enough about me to allow that connection, to feel worthy of that connection. And I think that's key. That is so key. And sometimes it takes somebody else reminding, you know, sometimes it does, even today, it takes somebody else reminding me that I'm okay to feel that connection and to be worthy of that connection. And I can be worthy of celebration.
Yeah.
Right? Because, before we started, I got an email. You know, I was replying to an email from my new co-minister, and I had the same idea that she had presented to me earlier in the week, and I kind uh-huh. of dismissed that. I said, we didn't do that. But it's like, because it's like, we need to do it's called an installation ceremony, where you install a new minister into a group.
Uh-huh.
She said, I think we need to do this. And I was like, okay, because there's still that little part of me, that little 6-year-old part of me that went, nah, we don't need to do that. And I went, no, we do, because it's not for me.
Right.
It is for me, but it's not right. for me. It's about the community, right? It's about reminding us of that connection. It's about reminding us of the power of community. You know, is honoring me and honoring the community, because we've made an agreement that says we are going to walk this road together.
Mm-hmm.
And that they've selected me to be one of the individuals that says, okay, we're going to go this way. Right. So I get to allow that honoring.
Right. And part of it, probably for you, because I know you're a big giver, is also learning how to receive.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because many of us feel like, you know, our worth is how we serve. But in serving others, we also need to learn how to be open to let them serve mm-hmm. us in return.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And remember how to receive artfully.
Right.
Right. And just thank say you. Thank you.
Thank
just
you.
Say thank you. Just say thank you.
Right.
Don't dismiss. Don't make excuses.
It's no big deal. Right.
Yeah. This shirt. No. Right.
Yeah.
Don't need the discount. Just say thank you.
Right.
Or say, I received that. Thank you.
Yeah.
Right.
It's beautiful.
It can be that simple. So, yeah. And that's, yeah. That's frequently been a challenge. The first time I got that lesson was, long time ago, 40 some odd years ago. I was actually in a workshop where we practiced that. That was something that we walked around and somebody would give us a compliment. And all we were allowed to say was thank you. And like for 5 minutes walking around the space.
Wow.
You just have to say thank you. As hard, it's amazing how hard that can be if you're not, because it's not, for so long, it's not okay. We were told, it's self-centered. No.
It's being gracious, right. And appreciative of the intention of the gift.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well,
you are a gift, Lee.
Oh, thank you.
All right. So the last question that I ask my guests, because this podcast is called Wake Up to Real Love, is how do you define real love?
Real love is giving and receiving without thought of giving and receiving.
Mm.
Write that down. It's for me, it's flow, because I believe for me, ultimate, the highest form of love is the givingness of spirit.
Mm. That beneficial presence you were talking about?
The beneficial presence, yes. Uh-huh. It's the givingness of spirit to its creation, through its creation. And we can only give if we receive, because it's a flow.
Right.
It's a channel. And it's an infinite, limitless channel. And to shut off either end of that is destructive.
Mm.
So it's a matter of, for me, that love that we're talking about is an infinite flow. And I have to allow that flow. It is my responsibility, I believe, to allow that flow, because I hold myself and you, Dawn, and everybody I encounter as an individualized expression of that givingness.
Right.
Ultimately. We forget sometimes.
Well, that's why we're here, to remind each other.
And we are here to remind each other, yes. It's like Ron Dass said, we are here to walk each other home.
Yep.
Yes. Back to that.
Yeah. It's beautiful. Beautiful, 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 beautiful. You have been the tree of life for me today.
There it is.
How do people get in touch with you or find you on social media, et cetera, et cetera?
You can find me on, I have my coaching business account is Simple Spirit 101, all one word, either on Facebook or Instagram. Also now you can find me at the Scottsdale Center for Spiritual Living on Facebook.
Nice.
One of the things they asked me to do, because I've become so skilled at it over the last couple of years, they have put me in charge of all of our social media stuff.
Ooh.
So, yeah. So lately I've just been kind of recycling some of my older stuff.
Uh-huh.
Never made it onto there. But yeah, there'll be new stuff. I'll be doing some live stuff there. And there are some live stuff, some older live stuff on my Instagram account. You can DM me through Instagram and Facebook. If you want to connect for whatever reason, looking forward to that.
Cool.
Thank you, Dawn. It's been
I'm so glad we're connected.
Me too. Me too. You ever get out to Tempe? You give me a holler. You're flying. If you've got a layover through Sky Harbor,
I will.
Give me a call.
I will. All right. So for the listeners, because I always gain a lot of wisdom when I listen, you know, and we've had a very fruitful, blossoming conversation. Right. So for the listeners, please subscribe to the Wake Up to Real Love podcast show. Leave 5-star reviews, share with all of your friends, anybody that you feel would benefit from this conversation, because this is what we're here to do, is to help normalize our challenges and struggles in life and give hope for people, you know, through this healing journey, to recognize that one, the most important relationship you'll ever have is the one you have with yourself, because that sets the stage for every other relationship that you have. And two, that no matter what you've been through or no matter what you're going through, that you are worthy of love. And you've been a beautiful example of that. So thank you, Lee. Oh,
thank you, Dawn.
And for me, you can find me on all the socials at either at The Awakening with Dawn or Dawn Richard, R-I-S-H-A with an accent R-D, LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, blah, blah, blah. And if you have any recommendations or if you want to hear more conversations about a particular topic, please write me and let me know, because we are here to share more light and love in the world. So thank you so much, Lee, for being here with me. You're a beautiful, beautiful soul.
Thank you, Dawn. It's a pleasure.
All right. And listeners, every day, wake up to more and more real love. We'll see you next time. Take care.
Subscribe to the Wake Up to Real Love podcast. Leave 5-star reviews. And, of course, share with your friends. You can find Dawn on various social media platforms at Dawn Richard or at The Awakening with Dawn.